see it as New Testament teaching. I remember the time I wanted to get permission to use the baptistry in the Baptist church up in Eugene, Oregon, to baptize new converts. And it was in the middle of the winter, and it was pretty cold to go out in the icy water of the river. And in the summertime, of course, or even spring and fall, we did do that. But I wanted to use the indoor baptistry, and I have used it before, but there was a new ministry at the Baptist Church in Eugene. And they had a very bad, the nicest building of any church in Eugene. And so I came in to ask him, and well, at first he was polite, and he said, "Well, will you excuse me just a minute, Mr. Armstrong?" So he left me, and he went upstairs. They had an office upstairs. And he came back down, and he was a little different now, and he was crying. He says, "I should say not to Mr. Armstrong. We cannot let you use our Baptist church." Well, his abrupt change of manner sort of aroused a little astonishment in my mind. I tried to laugh a little bit, and I said, "Well, would you mind telling me why?" And he said, "I will just ask you one question. On what day do you hold your services? What day do you have your worship?" "Why," I said, "on the same day that Jesus Christ did. What day do you use?" He said, "Well, I don't want to engage in any argument with you now, Mr. Armstrong, because we are a New Testament church. We don't have anything to do with that Old Testament." He made a mistake when he asked me what day did we observe. I said, "The same day that James said. What day did you observe?" And that kind of nettled him a little bit. I had him over the barrel. But, anyway, we didn't get to use the baptistry. Although we had used it before under another ministry. But, you see, they would throw the Old Testament away. But you see, these things in the Old Testament were written for us today. Now, these things happened to them as a warning, but they were written down for our instruction. They were not written for the instruction of ancient Israel, and a lot of people don't realize that. Ancient Israel never got any real teaching out of what is written in the Old Testament. As a matter of fact, neither did the early church get to, not just some of the early churches, the people of Israel didn't. Mostly the whole Bible has been written for God's church today in this latter half of the 20th century. I fully believe that. I have come to have to believe that. I have come to see that. I didn't believe that once. But I do believe that now. But they were written down for our instruction, upon whom the end of the ages is come. Now, we're at the end of the time. Paul thought then at that time that they were, and later he discovered that they were not. But when he wrote this, he thought they were. "No temptation has overtaken you that is not common to man. God is faithful, and he will not let you be tempted beyond your strength. But with the temptation will also provide the way of escape, that you may be able to endure it." But however, you may suffer a little bit in enduring it, and you may have to endure, which isn't always pleasant. Now that enduring and that struggle is one of the things that builds character in us, just like hard physical exercise of pulling or pushing against an object that is hard develops muscle. It doesn't come easy. Verse 14, "Therefore, my beloved, shun the worship of idols. I speak as the sensible men, judge for yourselves what I say. The cup of blessing, which we bless, referring now to the little cup that you take the wine in at the Passover, is it not a participation in the blood of Christ? It has that symbolic spiritual meaning. The bread which we break, is it not a participation in the body of Christ? Because there is one bread, we who are many are one body. For we all partake of the one bread. Consider the people of Israel. Are not those who eat the sacrifices partners in the altar? What do I imply then? That food offered to idols is anything? Or that an idol is anything? No. I imply that what pagans sacrifice, they offer to demons and not to God. I do not want, and I correct the word demons, it should be there. I do not want you to be partners with demons. You cannot drink the cup of the Lord and the cup of demons. You cannot partake of the table of the Lord and the table of demons. Shall we provoke the Lord to jealousy? Are we stronger than he is? We're not stronger than the Lord. We're talking spiritually rather than physically even. All things are lawful, quote and unquote, but not all things are helpful, or expedient, I think it is in the King James. Quote again, all things are lawful, unquote, but not all things build up or are expedient. Let no one seek his own good, but the good of his neighbor. In other words, good and not good. And it is God's will is always good, not good. Eat whatever is sold in the meat market without raising any question on the ground of conscience. For the earth is the Lord and everything in it. Now, a lot of people will use that to say that you can eat all ham and pork, oysters, lobster, and things like that you want. That is not what it really is saying or meaning. Now, let's see, that was verse 25. Whatsoever sold in the sandals or the meat market, that eat, asking no question for conscience sake, for the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. If any of them that believe not bid me to a feast, and you be disposed to go, whatsoever is set before you, eat, asking no question for conscience sake. Now that does mean that if you are out before and you are a dinner guest with some unbeliever and they serve some ham or pork or seafood, but rather than put a stumbling block before them and make yourself look like an ignoramus or someone wrong, you should perhaps eat it. However, I want to tell you how I have done about that, and I think that God has led me. Let me see first how that is here. In the eat whatever is sold in the meat market without raising any question on the ground of conscience. Now, conscience is only not, is not, remember that conscience is not what God says is wrong, but conscience is what will bother you according to what you think is wrong. If you think that a thing is right, it will not hurt your conscience, even though it may be very wrong and very sinful. But if you think something is wrong, even though God says it's perfectly right, if you think it's wrong, it's going to hurt your conscience if you take it. Your conscience only bothers you according to what you think is wrong. It does not have anything to do with what God says is right or wrong. Let's get that straight, right to that point. For the earth is the Lord's and everything in it. It all belongs to Him. Now, it is therefore, even that would indicate to you that God Himself can tell you what you can eat and what you must not eat. Now, He continues. If one of the unbelievers invites you to dinner and you are disposed to go, eat whatsoever is set before you without raising any questions on the ground of conscience. But if someone says to you, it has been offered in sacrifice, then out of consideration for the man who informed you, and for conscience sake, for his conscience sake, I mean his conscience, not yours, do not eat it. For why should my liberty be determined by another man's scruples? If I partake with thankfulness, why am I denounced for that for which I give thanks? Now let me read those verses again in the King James. That's quite important that we understand that. Verse 27, 28, long in there now, let's see. If any one of them that build not bid you to a feast, and you be disposed to go, whatsoever is set before you, eat, asking no question, for conscience' sake, because it may bother his conscience. And maybe it's something brought to him, and you must have love for the other fellow. Now, I'll tell you how I have done. For example, I think at one time I was at dinner with the president of the nation that is now called Sri Lanka, just south of India on an island. And, what did we used to call that nation? Ceylon. Well, but it was the president of Ceylon. There was some ham or pork served. Well, I just sort of left it to one side and ate two other things, and the waiter came and took it away, and the host there, the president, never even noticed that I didn't eat it. Now, there have been many times I've been able to do that, and when I have been able to sort of sidetrack it and not eat it, or at a banquet where no one notices but the waiters what I eat and don't eat anyway, I do not eat any unclean food. But if it would be a stumbling block to the man who is the guest, and I am there, it would not be wrong for me to eat it. And I think I have, maybe on one or two occasions in many, many years of my life, I may have done that. But very rarely, nearly always, I have been able to avoid eating the unclean food. And I do avoid it if I can do it without putting a stumbling block in front of him. But Paul is making it out here that the big thing is do not harm the other fellow. You see what I mean? And now let me give you another example. There was a woman attending the services that I was holding up north of Salem, Oregon one time. She was quite interested. She was not yet baptized. But I was teaching her, and she was coming along. And she invited me to dinner. And I came to dinner, and she had spent a great deal of time preparing a whole dinner around a pork roast. And she made that pork roast she brought out very proudly out of the kitchen, put it on the table, and it was beautiful. And I could see she had done a lot of work on it. Now, what was I going to do? Think a minute, what would you do? She had not yet been baptized, but I was teaching her. In a sense, she was a student of mine, wasn't she? She was a prospect and a possible prospect to be baptized. I looked at it and I hesitated. And she saw I was hesitating. And she said, well, she's a little embarrassed, and she said, well, Mr. Armstrong, is something wrong? And I said, well, yes. I said, look, I am teaching you God's truth. And I said, I certainly hate to do it at this time, and that you made that look so beautiful, and you've gone to all this work, and you've tried so hard to please me, and I do appreciate that. And I do know what your intentions were and how you wanted to do what is right. But I'm here to teach you what is right and what is not right. And I said, let's just have a little Bible lesson. It won't take but a few minutes. I made it quite brief, but I got my Bible, and I opened it to the things in the New Testament and back about Leviticus 11, and I told her what God says about clean and unclean meat. I said, now, if you were a total unbeliever and it would have defended you, I would probably have eaten that. But I said, you appear to be beginning to believe. And I'm here more as your teacher, and so I've had to teach you. I said, I'm so sorry to have upset something you worked so hard to try to please me about. She said, Mr. Armstrong, I just thank you from the bottom of my heart. She said, I could not have had the teaching about that in a more convincing manner. I know now, and I will never again eat unclean food. And I think that that woman never did, as long as she lived. I don't know if you still live or not. I don't know. Is it still up there in the church up north of Salem, Oregon, or not? But now, see, I had to consider her in the light of a believer. Where I'd been with a non-believer, and the non-believer had servants and didn't himself, like the president of the nation, and didn't himself notice whether I ate it or not, and there were so many things on the table anyway, I did not eat it. Now, I will say this, Mr. Rader was with me, and he did the same thing. And Mr. and Mrs. Rader always do the same thing. He just simply, and if one of us notices and the other doesn't, well, we'll whisper to the other one that that is pork, or that is this, or that, or the other thing. And then we just carefully don't eat it, but we try to not let anyone notice it, and we don't want to cause offense to anyone else. We try to, in other words, obey God and not eat it, but at the same time, not offend the other person. Now, let that be just a little bit of an explanation of expounding how to handle this kind of thing in the light of this scripture. For why should my liberty be determined by another man's scruples? If I partake with thankfulness, why am I denounced because of that for which I give thanks? So, whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. Give no offense to Jews or to Greeks or to the Church of God, just as I try to please all men. But to please men only, not by doing the wrong thing or anything like that, but just not, what he means not is not so much to please other men as not to harm other men or give offense. Now let me see, that was verse, that's getting down to the very end of the chapter, verse 31. Whether therefore, King James now, whether therefore you eat or drink or whatsoever you do, do all to the glory of God. Now that's the thing, do it to the glory of God. But the glory of God, the first consideration is whether you harm the other fellow. The second consideration is whether you harm yourself. Now, whether you can, without harming the other fellow, still not harm yourself or not eat the unclean food, don't eat it. So that's what we all do. And I just thought I'd tell you that. Give men offense. You shouldn't offend others by things like that. Neither to the Jews, nor the Gentiles, nor to the Church of God. Even as I please all men in all things, that is, again, he means that I try not to offend other people, not to please them in the wrong way. Paul doesn't mean that. Not seeking mine own profit, but the profit of many, that they may be saved. Now that concludes that chapter. Now we come on to the 11th chapter of 1 Corinthians. Be imitators of me as I am of Christ. I commend you because you remember me in everything and maintain the traditions even as I have delivered them to you. He starts out, of course, it's not the start of another chapter. He says, be imitators of me as I am of Christ. Let me read that in the King James again. Be ye followers of me, even as I am of Christ. Now, that brings to mind an incident. After the meetings at which converts were made, that started the present Worldwide Church of God back in 1933, just outside of Eugene, Oregon, in that little tribute school, we were holding services out 4 miles west then and organized the church, and I was holding services 3 nights a week. Now, we held the regular Sabbath service, but we also had 3 weeknight services, and some who were not members continued to come from the surrounding country to those 2 night services, weeknight services. And there was this old man, Belshaw, past 80 years of age, but quite a Bible scholar, he thought. And he was the one who had heckled me, you know, in the meeting about 2 or 3 times until he got tired of it and had not heckled me anymore. And he hadn't heckled me now for...